From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. Back when Atlanta real estate deals could be made over a drink and a handshake, Atlanta's oldest strip club was born, the Claremont Lounge, which, as the late intrepid Anthony Bourdain suggested, should be a national landmark.
The most beloved institution in the entire city, a place of Renaissance-era beauty and erotic and sophisticated nightlife, where the shots flow out in tiny plastic cups. It's not like other strip clubs. It's operating on a whole other level.
Since 1965, the dingy lounge in the basement of the Hotel Claremont has been a place where fifth-generation Atlantans rub elbows with newly arrived hipsters and ladies who lunch with hip-hop artists. In June, the Hotel Claremont reopened after an extensive renovation, so we invited Dana Scythe to talk about the storied history of the place. She's a writer, and she collaborated with a photographer and a designer on a book about the legendary landmark called No Cameras. Hello, Dana.
Hi. Nice to be here.
I'm so glad you're here. I'm so curious about this place after looking at your book.
To hear the Bourdain clip was lovely and sad all at the same time. To prepare for this, I went back to my interview, and he really nailed it. He was so for women empowerment, and that's kind of what this story was for me.
Mm-hmm. He spoke to you about it.
He did, and what the place meant to him and what Blondie meant to him and the women he got to know through the years and the visits he had here in Atlanta. And that's sort of what drew me to the project as well. It really is kind of this relic and national treasure, as he said. And the two women owners really had something remarkable and really cherished it and made it sort of untouched. It really has been an institution since 1965.
Well, I want to ask you about these two women because you dedicate the book.
I did.
To the ladies of the Claremont Lounge, some living, some whose spirits are still there. Women play a really powerful role here, which doesn't fit, let's say, the typical image of the strip club.
I agree. Tracy Brown and Kathy Martin are the two women owners of the Claremont Lounge.
How did they come to own it?
And, well, it's a fascinating story, which is actually what drew me to the project when I worked on the book. And it is this legendary story where you didn't know what was true and what wasn't until I got there. And there are parts of it that really feel like a TV movie, which is a man by the name of Stanley McDonald had the club since 1965. And in the 90s, he passed away. And before he passed, he willed the club to Tracy Brown and Kathy Martin. Basically, when he was alive, it was a 10% deal. And when he passed, they became full owners of it. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't really a handshake deal but he definitely had certain stipulations that were not willed, which was don't ever change the place. And they really haven't.
And now, after the renovation?
Right. After the renovation, it appears the same. I personally have not been back. There's a part of me that feels like it is still within the Claremont that I knew. And not since it's been renovated and had this beautiful architecture, you know, touched and all of that. But it really is a relic.
Well, let's talk about how it became the Claremont Lounge. It was the Jungle Room originally?
That's right. So the timeline kind of goes something like this. In 1965, Mac secured a lease on the space in the 700 block of Ponce de Leon. And it housed the Claremont Hotel since then. And it was owned by a man named Charlie Loudermilk. And Charlie Loudermilk and Mac were friends. And it was literally a handshake deal where they had this crazy lease that was like, I think it was like $3,000 or something. And then when I was writing the book, it was like $6,000 that they leased the space. But back to the Jungle Room. So it was opened as the Jungle Room, and then it changed at some point in time to something called the Playboy Club. And of course, Playboy
was not happy about that.
So then it changed after that. They had to shut down, I believe, briefly, and then change to the Claremont Lounge.
Okay, so Kathy and Tracy get it in 68, you said?
No, they actually get it in
the 90s.
The 90s, yeah. Mac died, I believe, in the 90s.
So
or 2000.
What makes it so different from other strip clubs?
Wow. Tracy says it best, I think, which is you can be anything you want to be at the Claremont Lounge. You can be overweight. You can be 70 years old. You can be a lesbian. You can be so many things that maybe society won't let you be outside those doors, and particularly in regular sort of typical strip clubs where it's sort of Stepford Wives and look a certain way and feel a certain way, where these women are sort of empowered to be who they want to be. And I think the customers there are the same. One of the dancers, Little Kathy, said, I always remember this quote, she said the Claremont Lounge to her was like a dive bar that happened to have strippers on stage. And I think that's it. It's a dive bar. It's your local neighborhood joint that happens to have naked ladies.
Atlanta's Claremont Hotel reopened this summer after an extensive renovation, a matter of concern for fans of the dingy club in the hotel basement. It's a place where old Atlantans raise glasses with of-the-moment celebrities and no cameras. That's a house rule and the name of a book about the legendary Claremont Lounge. Dana Scythe wrote the book and told me that the strip club has a family vibe.
It does. I think, you know, the women there, from what I found in my interviews and getting to know them as people, first of all, their stories are very rich and there's a lot of overlapping layers to their stories. And some of them are quite similar, of sort of tragic beginnings and endings and all sorts of things that you can imagine of what gets somebody where they are in that occupation, I suppose. But, you know, they fought like sisters. I think Kathy and Tracy were kind of mother hens to them, and they were sort of like annoyed with them like they were their daughters and stuff like that. So there is this real familiar family atmosphere. And at the end of the day, these women work 6 days a week. The Claremont Lounge, oddly, is closed on Sundays, which is kind of ironic. But and then I think it's closed on several holidays like Thanksgiving, Christmas, and 4th of July. Random. And so, you know, you're spending Christmas Eve with these women. They're a family. They're there all the time together. There were, while I was interviewing people, there was a mother and daughter that danced, not together on stage at the same time, but they were definitely working shifts together. So there is a family component, lots of cousins and, you know, a bartender whose sister then came and sort of that sort of stuff. Somebody told me once, it's almost like a subculture within a subculture. And I truly think that. While I was working on the book, there's a story of one of the members of the band, Mumford & Sons. He got kicked out for bringing out his phone and trying to take pictures. So they really don't let anybody do it, whether you're, you know, a famous rock star or me. I wasn't allowed to take pictures.
You got kicked out too, didn't you?
Well, Blondie kicked me out of the dressing room more than once.
How come?
You know, I was in their space. They didn't know me. And they certainly have, a lot of the dancers have been very much burned by journalists and writers. And there was a part of me that questioned my role in the project and exploiting them and not telling their story fairly or leaving somebody out and getting to know a girl that I couldn't put in the book because I just didn't have creative control over that. That certainly happened. There are two women in the book that I spoke with extensively and pushed very hard to get in the book. And, you know, it just didn't happen. So I think they are cautious and rightfully so. You know, I think somebody that comes in and speaks to them for an hour can then go out and make up whatever story they want, potentially. And I wanted, it took me a lot of time to let them know I hopefully could cross that bridge where they didn't think I was like that.
And Blondie is one of the strippers, a legendary stripper for a particular skill.
Yes. She has a lovely skill. You know, it is. She's famous for it. She crushes Pabst beer cans with her breasts. And she says she needed a niche and she found it and she became famous for it.
So the book was published in what, 2013?
It was actually in 2014. Okay, so my part of the project was done, but we went to print and it came out in 2014.
So by that time, Ethan Orley, principal with developer Oliver Hospitality, had bought it, right? In 2012?
That's right. I believe the deal of the hotel, the building being sold, happened in 2013 in January. But during the bulk of my interviews, you know, this was looming. While I was working on the story for the book and at the lounge all the time, the hotel was derelict and all these horrible articles were coming out about there's bed bugs here and this is not a place for anybody.
He said he might have to wear a hazmat suit when you went in the place.
That's right. It was awful. And there was one man that kind of was the caretaker, Bill. And he showed us around the very first time I ever went there and showed me all the way up to the roof. And they talked about how much it would be, you know, conceptually to redo the place. And they were like, oh, it'll probably cost $1 million. And, you know, at the time I was thinking, it's going to cost a lot more than $1 million.
I think it cost $30 million.
That's right. I think it probably, yeah, times 30. So, but you could see the roots of the building that were so beautiful. And the former owners, the Laudermilks, who Stanley Mack had the original handshake deal with to get the lounge in the Claremont Hotel, his wife, Lillian, Tracy tells a story about her, you know, on her hands and knees waxing these marble floors. So you knew the building itself was so beautiful. It had just, you know, somebody just couldn't keep it up. It was always looming in interviews that I did with Tracy and Kathy of who was going to buy this building and what that meant for them.
And what does it mean for them? Are they still there?
They are still there. At the time, though, that I will say that they were scared. They were scared it wouldn't be the Claremont. And one of the best quotes I have from Tracy is when Mack willed the club was, the Claremont is the Claremont because it's the Claremont, i.e. don't change it. So she had this real pressure, I think, for herself that she knew that's what set it apart. So here you have this developer coming in and potentially building this boutique hotel. And at the time, the interviews I had, it's funny because almost all of what they said sounded like fantasy and like kind of Chicken Little, like the sky is falling, but it all really happened. They were like, and they're going to put a restaurant here and they're going to do this and it'll be a boutique hotel. And honestly, yeah, it's all of that.
It is stunning. And it's a beautiful renovation.
That's right.
It was Reunion Goods and Services, I think, a New York studio that that oversaw it. Eclectically lavish is one of the ways that I've seen it described. Rock and roll meets grandma's living room, you know? They did a really beautiful job. But it's interesting that the roots, the foundation at the very bottom, the Claremont, has stayed pretty much the same.
It has. To the best of my knowledge, it really has. And I think there's something really remarkable about that. And you can even think of that in terms for Atlanta because, you know, if I'm going to take a stance on it, I will absolutely say having a boutique hotel in this building, in this place and time, across from Pond City Market, it is amazing that this is happening. It's amazing that it's happened. It's a treasure that was completely derelict, that building. So I'm glad it's there. Atlanta desperately needed a boutique hotel.
So does Atlanta also need a somewhat seedy strip club at the bottom of a basement?
Why not?
Dana Scythe, who collaborated on a photo book about the Claremont Lounge called No Cameras. You'll find a link for more at gpbnews.org.